Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Sustainability in the Sea. My name is Carissa. I am your host today. You're joining me from my couch with Riley on the middle of September, just ahead of Climate Week. Today, I wanted to focus this episode, just you and me, on the people who listen to Sustainability in the Sea obviously care about the ocean, but you've probably noticed from Future Swell and even my channels that I'm a huge climate activist, and we advocate for climate solutions that integrate the ocean and other approaches to solutions as well. And so I wanted to take the time this episode to talk about how ocean conservation is connected to climate action, and why, if we care about the ocean and we want to protect or study or save the ocean, we have to look at this through the lens of climate. And the pipeline from ocean conservationist to climate activist is very, very short because they are so connected and the same. So we're going to talk about why the ocean is important for climate and how they're connected. And I also want to talk to you a little bit about what is going on with the ocean as part of Climate Week, as well as what you can expect in the rest of September from decisions made about climate commitments by world leaders and sectors. So let's get into it. This is Sustainability and the Sea. Okay, so I'm actually recording this right before I'm going to the climate strike that is taking place in Honolulu on the island of Oahu, which is where I'm based. So the global climate strike is happening all over the world, with the primary strike happening in New York City on Sunday, September 17th. But because of social media and the power of organization and all of these tools of communications to bring the climate and environmentalist community together, there's actually protests going on all over the world. And I found this one because of organizations that I know that are helping lead it, but also because of the fossil fuel treaty. So there's a fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty, which is advocating to end fossil fuels fair and in a just way. And they are a hub, I'll link them in the show notes, where they have a lot of information if you want to learn more about this. But they also had a map where you could register your climate strike so people could figure out if there was one in your area. So whether you're watching the climate strikes on social media or you're participating in one yourself, these are a really, really, really powerful tool historically in making change in the U.S. Protests and marches, they make people uncomfortable. I think I've seen that throughout my life, but even historically, but they are demonstrated, proven solution to call on our leaders to act and put pressure on them. One of the examples that I learned about many years ago was through the original Earth Day march. That was in 1970. And within a year of that protest, which was so big, like hundreds of thousands of people, the Environmental Protection Agency was created and the Clean Air Act was passed within a year. And we also saw it with the March on Washington, which is where Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech. And that was obviously iconic in pushing the civil rights agenda forward and implementing solutions that were fair and just. In my personal life during COVID, watching the Black Lives Matter protests spark up around the United States was extremely instrumental in helping demand environmental justice and justice for the victims of police brutality in the United States. So we've seen like state policies pop up and immediately after that to help, body cam footage and accountability. But then we've also seen like the creation of an environmental justice focused, I think it's a commission in the federal administration. So whatever, that's just a little bit about how marches and protests work. But there's also a huge importance on social media for Organization for the Climate. So maybe you've seen youth climate activists on social media stand up to the White House, or stand up through films, or stand up through speaking. The thing with the way social media is viewed nowadays is that elected officials, whether they're the president or their representatives at the state and local level, they have to know what's being said about them on social media because it's important for their political career. And for that reason, social media campaigns that even if they just stay online can still be extremely effective at causing of getting our message heard and causing leaders to act. So a really great example of this was the Willow Project, which was an expansive drilling project in Alaska that rallied 1.1 million letters to the White House through a social media campaign on Instagram and TikTok. And the youth were really clear, Biden, don't approve the Willow Project. And while that fight isn't completely over yet, it is a staple example of ways that climate activism needs social media to organize and to connect activists in different areas of the world and the country. All that to be said, I'm just going to shout out that if you want to follow more climate activists, that would be a wonderful way to not only learn about climate naturally through your social media feed, but also to they have incredible calls to action. I do a lot of climate activism on social media, but I focus mainly on the ocean, but they have a lot of calls to action around petitions you can sign and ways you can help. And if you want to make videos or if you want to send letters or emails, like I would just really, 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 really recommend integrating that into your social media sphere. Okay, so that's just a little bit of background on how climate activism is working nowadays and reasons why it's worthwhile, because this is the fight of our lives. It's the work of our generation, and it is our opportunity to create a transition and redesign systems that work for people and planet. We have all the solutions that we need to stop the climate crisis. They're everywhere. Indigenous wisdom can help solve the climate crisis. Indigenous people have been living in harmony with the planet sustainably for generations, and that knowledge is going to be key in redesigning systems that are in alignment with nature. The ocean is our climate regulator globally. It regulates our global climate. By protecting the ocean, we can create a huge buffer that fosters planetary resilience in the face of the climate emergency. It's baffling to me. I can't do this in one episode, but it's baffling to me to realize how much pressure has already been put on our leaders and how they're acting, yes, but slowly and not fast enough, which is why we are continuing to keep the pressure on. The big oil industry knew about climate change as early as the 70s. We know that now. We know that they invested millions of dollars in a marketing campaign to foster climate denial. And we know that now they're invested in climate doom. So every time we choose to feel hopeless and say it's too late, that is a product of climate doom marketing. And I just want you to remember that the people on the front lines, marginalized communities that are already bearing the worst impacts of the climate crisis, they don't have the privilege to give up. And so we don't have it either. Climate Week is an incredible opportunity. It's already started by the time this episode's going out. And one of the reasons why there's so many events and organizational opportunities in New York City is because the United Nations Climate Ambition Summit is happening on September 20th. And so Climate Week is an opportunity to make demands to leaders like ahead of that summit. So my understanding is at that summit, leaders are going to have to actually like share with other countries what they're doing about climate change. But so Climate Week is an opportunity to make those demands really clear. And so there's a lot of United Nations events happening. And also just integrating the ocean in climate action and the climate agenda is a key outcome or a key goal to be an outcome for Climate Week. So why do we want to do that, guys? If you didn't already know, the ocean generates around every other breath of air that we take. It's somewhere between 50 and 80% of all oxygen on Earth is created by the ocean. That is from phytoplankton, who are photosynthesizing all day long. And because of photosynthesis, they're taking in carbon dioxide. So that means that the ocean is brings us to number two. The ocean is a huge climate buffer to climate change because it's a carbon sink. It actually absorbs around 90% of the excess heat from our atmosphere. The ocean does. That's because the specific heat of capacity of water is higher than air, but nonetheless, it absorbs all the heat. So like, imagine how hot it would be if the ocean wasn't absorbing all that heat, you know? We rely on healthy oceans with every other breath of air that we take as we inhale and exhale. I try to express gratitude for that. Ocean Health, Human Health is an initiative and ideology that Bodhi Patil and I have been championing for quite some time and many others. And I think that the more that people realize that ocean health is connected to human health, the more people will care about the oceans. You don't have to live on a coast to care about the oceans. So I mentioned this earlier, but the ocean regulates our climate system. That's because heat from the atmosphere is going to the ocean. That's because ocean currents are carrying that heat and energy throughout the world. That's because the ocean is what connects all continents and what cleans our air. So we can't solve the climate crisis without protecting the ocean, because the ocean is 70% of the surface area of Earth. That's why I'm always calling everything planet ocean, because it's not planet Earth. It's 70% ocean. Like, come on, guys. And I also like to remind people, like, we're talking about these climate solutions, and at the federal level, that is totally being like co-opted by clean energy, which is extremely important and necessary. But I'm a huge proponent of nature-based solutions. Nature-based solutions are solutions that are based off of Earth's natural processes, and the ocean is, and biodiversity and ecosystem health is a huge, we need to be looking at nature-based solutions through the lens of those components. The ocean is a source of blue carbon. So we think, when you think of carbon sinks, you think of trees and forests, right? The Amazon rainforest, because they're sucking all that carbon dioxide and turning it into oxygen. But the ocean, because of that process I just explained to you, with phytoplankton creating air and oxygen, is that it makes the ocean our biggest carbon sink, because it's 70% of the planet as well. And that's not just phytoplankton, that's whales. Great whales are a huge source of blue carbon. That's mangrove ecosystems, that's coral reefs, that's all these pieces of the ocean ecosystem that, when functioning and healthy, are absorbing carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And it's far more than rainforests. It's estimated that the ocean absorbs 30% of global emissions released into the atmosphere. 30%, you guys, what? Also, the source is from NOAA. I should have been saying the sources, but NOAA, NASA, World Wildlife Fund, United Nations. You guys know that my undergraduate degree was in ecology and evolution. I thank the world every day that that is the major that I chose, because I look at things through the lens of ecosystems and ecology and through geologic time scales that I learned during my understanding of evolution. So the Earth is obviously billions of years old, 4.6 billion years old, actually. We've only been around for 200,000 years or so, Homo sapiens, but life began in the ocean. Don't know if you guys know that. All life began in the ocean. That's why you'll hear people say it's our greatest common ancestor. In Hawaiian culture, all life began with the coral polyp, koa, and it's their greatest common ancestor. Over 3 billion people rely on the ocean for their primary source of protein, seafood. There are 7 to 8 billion people in the world right now. That is roughly half of them rely on the ocean. This is why sustainable seafood and aquaculture is center stage when it comes to ocean issues, because it supports so many people. And by exploiting those fisheries, we are directly threatening food security for coastal communities. And also, I'm not sure if you guys have listened to the Blue Mind episode that we have with Dr. Jay Nichols, but ocean health and human health goes beyond the fact that we need a healthy ocean to have healthy humanity. It actually goes into other crises we're facing right now, like the mental health crises. The ocean has the power to heal and build communities around healthier living. So what does that mean? Ocean therapy. So that could mean like spending time in the water, spending time near water, spending time looking at the water, listening to the water, is shown to reduce stress, anxiety, symptoms of depression, and a lot of different mental illnesses that are becoming more and more pervasive today. A really great example of this is ocean therapy for veterans that have suffered from PTSD. Taking them in the water has resulted in a sense of calm, prosperity, and in some cases, creativity. So if you want to learn more and you're really interested in that, you're a wellness human, go check out the Blue Mind Theory episode that we did a bit ago. Finally, the ocean can help address chronic illnesses. So a lot of medicinal purposes associated with the ocean are a reason that a lot of people want to safeguard it, like coral reefs and the deep sea have supported the development of a lot of medicines that either address symptoms or illnesses. And if those species go extinct, we lose the opportunity to discover that. So some medicinal applications that have been linked to the ocean have been related to cancer treatment, brain health, and then antiviral and antibacterial medications. I try to view the ocean as like the bridge that connects continents and communities. It truly is the thing that we all have in common. It's where we came from. It's what connects us. It connects us through air. It connects us through bridges from continents, and it connects us through our food, and it connects us through our health. And so if you've ever felt like you want to be a marine biologist and you don't understand why that means you have to care about climate, it's because we can't protect the ocean if the climate crisis goes unchecked. And we can't check and solve the climate crisis without protecting the ocean. And that was never taught to me in school. I never took a climate class during my 8 years in master's degree in marine science. But I hope that we'll live in a world one day where you can, and where it's a requirement, and where this connection is taught institutionally in schools, because activism isn't radical, it's for survival. And conservation isn't just to protect endangered species, it's to protect the survival of ecosystems and humans and this planet as we know it. And climate activism isn't something that we can turn a blind eye to anymore. Even this summer, you can't ignore it anymore. God, you guys, I was driving home about to film this episode. I saw the flooding in Libya. Like, that was yesterday. Like, summer has been catastrophic, and it's the first year of El Nino. And we're gonna see more and more impacts of the climate crisis as we continue to postpone action. But the United States as a country has so much power to set the stage and push the mark, and we're not doing nearly enough. The administration passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and that has unlocked millions of dollars for climate solutions in the US. And he's done more for climate than previous administrations. But we are in a closing window of opportunity, and this is going to result in standing up to big oil, to ending subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, to reimagining and redesigning our food systems. And the thing I want to leave you with is I always ask guests, what is the message that you want to leave, or have all the most powerful people in the world see if you had to? Hi, Riley. And the answer for me to that question is not to the most powerful people in the world, it's to you guys. And it's that we can't wait for other people to end these systems of exploitation and extraction. We have to do it. The work is ours to do. We have to redesign the systems. We have to get organized. We have to create the programs that will, that are made with the values of the future that we want. And we have to do it now. We have to do it together and collectively. And that's the only way that this is going to happen. Ocean conservation is climate action. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.